Welcome back to another episode of the Eyes Wide Open Life podcast. I'm Rocco. I've been covering a series of much shorter episodes about this phase that I'm going through myself and other people seem to be going through, which is the ending of a cycle. And specifically how to do that skillfully with grace. And there's a psychological component to it. There's a maturation component to it. There is a letting go. There is a spiritual component to it. There's an energetic component to it. And part of it is about letting go of the things that keep us small. These, what I refer to as, in air quotes, karmic ledger. Now, we don't have to believe exactly in the precise principles of karma as described in Hinduism and Eastern philosophy to understand what is meant by that. We're holding on to a kind of energetic baggage between us and something else, or us and someone else. And it's these relationships don't always survive in exactly the same way through the seasonality of our lives. And we spoke a few episodes ago about the project of forgiveness and how to do that with grace. And then reconciliation and how to process that. And how to make the invitation for a new season between you and something else, or you and someone else, or even you and yourself, your own identity. And then the third one was realizing that sometimes we have to say goodbye and walk away from projects, from teams, from jobs, from roles, from identities, from loved ones, even from our own family sometimes. Very hard, because the implication always is that the one that walks away didn't love enough. And that's not always true. Sometimes we just have to choose ourselves. And another part of this project, which I have been dotting out throughout these last three episodes, has been this idea of soul retrieval, this concept of less about story and narrative and the psychological implication of wounding and so on, and much more about like an energetic reclaiming of the bits of ourselves that we allowed to dissipate or be cauterized in our moments of shame, our moments of self-rejection, our moments of shock, of embarrassment, of social embarrassment, and where we realized we were somehow inadequate for the relationship or the moment or the something that we were trying to belong to. And we made a fool of ourselves. We expected something that didn't arrive, or we gave trust that was proven to be ill-given. And instead of holding that vulnerability the right way, we kind of dropped ourselves and ran forward and ran away. And a part of that, this idea of soul retrieval, is this energetic reclaiming. Part of it is the psychological and the story and the stepping through and, you know, ushering bits of yourself. And for some people that have been through extreme trauma and extreme shock, and extreme suffering, sometimes you do need to walk through the story component of our lives. And but there's this other piece that I was talking about, which is just the energetic reclamation of the scattered bits of our soul, our vitality, our libido. And part of that is in these phases of our life. We realize that our life actually has phases and seasons. And then part of it also then has to be this earlier phase of nonverbal time in our life when we were at our most vulnerable, where the first wound arrived, this wound of separation from the mother, of arrival into a place that was uncomfortable, unwelcoming, and we were rudely sort of ill-equipped in every sense to belong to. And then by definition, it has to be a longer scope beyond the scope of our personal individual lives. We are, of course, in a very real sense, in terms of evolutionary biology, we are a baton that has been passed on generation after generation, all the way back to our ancestors. And if your life is anything like mine, my ancestors, immediate ancestors, are a mess. There's a lot of dysfunction, a lot of generational trauma, a lot of damage, psychological and otherwise. But somewhere along the line, there was a lineage of ancestors, of people with enough defiance, enough get up and go, enough will to live and will to thrive and will to survive. They may not have carried the intentionality for us and our lives and our well-being and promise and potential. They might not have carried that directly with them, but their little bit of holding on and trying to belong to life in their own way, on their own terms, however that might have looked, actually gave us this incredible opportunity that we sit with here today. And the part of the prayer or the acknowledgement or the conversation has to be a I'm sorry and a thank you. Not to say we don't have our own legitimate cause for wounds and frustration and for a sense of neglect and abandonment. You know, every generation arrives to look around the fuck up that we've created in the world, socially, politically, economically, environmentally. And we look to the adults who are all so large and in charge and so certain of themselves and certain how what right looks like and what we should be doing and how we should be getting after it, that invariably there's always this generational gap between generations and this resentment and this belief that the previous generation is somehow foolish. And then the existing generation, when they look at a new generation arriving, always believes this generation is foolhardy and entitled. But some of that breaking away and rebellion that we do as teens is absolutely necessary because it's the only way we actually grow as a species and evolve as a species is through the packets of each individual pulling their own direction based on their own discernment and their own experience. And so when we eventually finish our rebellious phase as teenagers and we try and merge back with the adult collective, which already has been broken down in our loss of institutions like initiation and so on, we do still want to belong to what they've built, and we do still learn a begrudging respect for we grow up in a certain way and we realize that no one gets to their mistrusts and their foolishness dishonestly. Everyone inherits the best version or tries to implement the best version of what they think is right in their own way to the limit of their own understanding and their own experience. But we also have this sense that there's a better way. And if we're courageous in our life, we try and implement those better ways. And through this, the intention or the opportunity is that society or civilizations or species can actually consciously direct their own maturation and their own self-improvement. But this piece falls under the rubric of what spiritual people might call ancestral work. And there's so much woo-woo and silliness wrapped up into it. It gets very hard to figure out what of the part of this project is actually sensible and what part of it is just pure fancy. And I'm busy trying to navigate that at the moment and try and pick some reason and some sanity out of that process. And my first intuition is to look back at this idea, hermetic idea of as above, so below. And what it says to me is whatever is true in the seasons and the phases of my life should also be true to some degree between lives. And so it means that there must be some version of soul retrieval that is also relevant for experiences that I didn't feel directly, but I inherited through my DNA and through the viscera and through the tissues and through the social conditioning of my family and their emotional habits, etc. And a big part of that work has to be about looking for ways to forgive and accept those that came before and made the mistakes that they made, ourselves included. And when I look just at my own life, I realize that my hardest challenges were caused not because I was just a piece of shit or just because I was foolish. It was why I was foolish, or why I was acting so out of integrity with myself. And it was because I was trying to hold myself to promises. Promises that I made to myself to keep myself safe, or promises that I made to my family or my children to hold what I thought was my responsibility. And of course, I was not wise enough to understand that I had a seasonality and they had a seasonality and everyone was going through their own phases of growth and maturation, and they were entitled to rebel and entitled to make their own mistakes and entitled to honor their journey and cradle their wounds however they saw fit. And this episode is about the idea of how our promises, we think that they're noble things. And we think it's noble. Our intuition says it's noble to keep a promise. And what I want to explore with you all today is this notion of breaking promises, not because we don't want to be honor fidelity or honor faithfulness or our sense of responsibility, but because we have to realize that our promises hold us and the person who we make the promise to, whether that's a person or a team or a project or even a child. If we try and hold ourselves to the promise, we're kind of entrapping them as well. And I arrived at this set of ideas through a very different door, but obviously in many ways I am apprenticed to the work of David White. And I want to begin actually with one of his pieces, or at least include it somewhere in this idea of breaking promises. And when it's right to break promises, and how we need to give ourselves permission to let go of the promise in that version of ourselves that we thought we could sustain, and the way in which we expect this person, or maybe a project or someone else, especially a child of ours, to show up and keep showing up in the framing of what is implied by that promise. And the way we can actually entrap them. And then I want to talk about this. If this is then not the right way, how do we make these levels of commitment? And I think I've arrived at a better modality, a better way of making these kind of commitments. And the word agreement came to me. Agreement. When we have a problem keeping a promise, we should have a problem making a promise. Our moments of difficulty in our lives come from the struggle that we have with the intention to keep a promise, or our efforts to keep a promise, versus how they damage or break or compromise our authenticity and our integrity. And when we struggle to keep a promise, it should give us pause to maybe not be so quick to make promises. We should, if we have a problem keeping a promise, we should have a problem making promises. Our promises are absolute and binding, and therefore they cannot endure in a relative and changing world. And we end up breaking ourselves in the trying. Rather, make agreements and let there be terms. Rather, make agreements and let there be terms. We can hold or release ourselves more easily this way, with authenticity and with integrity and with love. You know, anything that does not serve the harmony and seasonality of life will fail or break us in the way that we try and sustain it. Systems fail when their inputs exceed their throughput, in a very classic engineering sense. And a promise is not different to that. It is a constraint of a way that we will show up and we will be to try and honor something that we value. We don't create our systems because we are pure fools, but we try to sustain them long past their season of relevance. And there's this quote, I don't you know, I've got a lot of challenges with old Mr. Elon Musk for some of the things that he's not particularly good at, but that doesn't mean nothing clever comes out of that man's mouth. And one of the things that he said was, there's nothing more foolish for an engineer to do than to try and solve for a problem that shouldn't exist in the first place. Try and optimize a system that shouldn't be there in the first place. And we do this to ourselves. We bend ourselves into contortions and psychological and emotional to try and hold ourselves to these impossible promises, commitments we make to a certain style of eating or to a faithfulness to one person who maybe is unfaithful to us in some ways. You know, there's lots of ways in which people can be unfaithful, in which infidelity can appear in a relationship. Sometimes it's the infidelity of emotional trust. Sometimes it's financial infidelity. And the best way to describe this is there is a container between you and something else, or between you and someone else. And the only way to really preserve that container is not to make a promise that you are going to hold the integrity of this hull regardless of how anyone on the ship behaves. It's impossible. What you instead do is you try and negotiate that container. Now, we call that consent. And this episode today speaks about that. Our promises hold us and the person, the other person, to a place and a season that we cannot contain without chaining us and them to a kind of static smallness. This goes for our children, our loved ones, our projects, our dreams. They all grow up. They all have their own seasonalities. They evolve and they mature. And we end up closing the way between us when we hold ourselves to our promises because of how we try to hold them to who and what they were when we made those promises. To be the psychological and spiritual adult in your own life, you have to break promises and allow promises to you to be broken. I often use this language, the adult, and it's obviously not somebody of legal drinking age or someone who can get a driver's license. It's the willingness to own your own shit, own your own life. It's not to say you're responsible or you're to blame for what happened to you. But you are responsible for how you show up in healing yourself, in loving yourself, in moving forward, in preserving your own authenticity and integrity. And so to be the psychological or spiritual adult in your own life, you have to actually break promises and allow promises that have been made to you. You have to allow them to be broken. You have to allow other people to be free of these promises. Otherwise, they can't grow and you can't grow. Or else, if you can't do that, you end up entrapping you and them in a smallness or breaking yourself or them in the service of trying to hold on to or preserve whatever that promise was designed to honor. And I say so often, we don't arrive at these things dishonestly. We weren't fools to make the promises. But we become fools when we try and hold on to them past their season of relevance. To be the psychological and spiritual adult in your own life, rather make agreements and let there be terms to those agreements. And there's two meanings beautifully to the word term. The one refers to these conditions under which the agreement should be held. And the other one is a term, as in a season, under which the agreement might be relevant. And it's those terms, and they're not just these blanket, static promises. They're more dynamic insofar as they can observe the seasonality. And they can flourish without compromising on your own authenticity and integrity and someone else's right to grow and change and explore their journey in their way. No, if the purpose of life is anything, it's listening with an uncompromising commitment and surrendering to what feels most true for ourselves and most true for those we love and what we love in each moment, regardless of the pain or the fear or the discomfort that's going to trigger. Fear is not danger. Pain is not injury. And discomfort is not loss. And the thing that tells them apart is consciousness, stillness, and discernment. And that's part of being a psychological and a spiritual adult, this holding your shit together in the face of fear, in the face of pain, in the face of discomfort. Because fear is not actual danger, and pain is not actual injury, and discomfort is not actual loss. And the telling the difference between the two lets us ask that question more sincerely. What does love look like right now? The earnest listening to what feels most true for ourselves and those we love is what I mean when I give the advice of asking, what does love look like right now? And I also use the word listening to the signal or following the signal. And there's a couple of aspects or levels at which we can listen to the signal. Part of that is very personal and individual to each and every single soul and human being. And part of it is the grander signal of a time or of a species or of a civilization or of life, the whole of life, the whole of life. And I'll talk more about the signal. But this is on a personal level, this is what I mean by the signal, the following of which guides us to transcendence by way of authenticity and actualization. And following that signal, asking ourselves what love looks like and being prepared to face the fear, the pain, and the discomfort of what comes next. To avoid actual danger, to avoid and repair actual injury, to avoid and mitigate or deal with actual loss. We sometimes have to break our promises, but if we want to invite a new seasonality for ourselves and a pathway for our own maturation and those we're in relationship with, what we can do instead is create agreements, containers. This is a container we're going to have in our relationship, and we're going to speak the terms or let them be known more clearly, more honestly, more fully. We're going to think about them and think about where our lines actually are and under what conditions they would actually change. Is it a temporal condition? Is it a factor of time and seasonality that would cause this to change? Or is it just some other kind of term, some other kind of condition, a condition of mutual respect, a condition of mutual effort? But without asking these questions, we are entering into the child's game, making promises that we are actually not capable of keeping without doing harm to ourselves and somebody else. And the project is actually less about holding on and being, you know, unrealistically faithful to a promise, and much more about letting go and having faith than it is about holding on. And this is the essence of flow. And there's two pieces that I want to read here. Really, I'm just going to read verbatim here from David White, and it's really going to land, I believe, about this idea of breaking promises, which is such a big part of letting cycles end and finding the doorway to the next cycle and how we can belong to the seasonality of what's still unfolding in our lives right now. To break a promise. Make a place of prayer, no fuss. Make a place of prayer, no fuss. Just lean into the white brilliance and say what you needed to say all along. Nothing too much. Nothing too much. Words as simple and as yours and as heard as the bird song above your head or the river running gently beside you. Let your words join one to another, the way stone nestles on stone, the way water just leaves and goes to the sea, the way your promise breathes and belongs with every other promise the world has ever made. Let your words join one to another, the way stone nestles on stone, the way water just leaves and goes onto the sea, the way your promise breathes and belongs with every other promise the world has ever made. Now leave them to go on. Leave them to go on. Let your words carry their own life without you. Let the promise go with the river. Have faith. Have faith. Walk away. Make a place of prayer. No fuss. Just lean into the white brilliance and say what you needed to say all along. Nothing too much. Words as simple and as yours and as heard as the birdsong above your head or the river running gently beside you. Let your words join one to another, the way stone nestles on stone, the way water just leaves and goes to the sea, the way your promise breathes and belongs with every other promise the world has ever made. Now leave them to go on. Let your words carry their own life without you. Let the promise go with the river. Have faith. Have faith. Walk away. And the author's note that he attaches to this piece is this poem, To Make a Promise, sometimes lived under the title To Break a Promise, as to my mind, I'm quoting David White here again, as to my mind, both the making and breaking of promises involve exactly the same combination of absolute presence and radical letting go. All romantic and committed forms of love live and breathe not only with the ground of the past and present, but with the horizon of implicit promise and invitation to a shared sense of becoming. When this horizon of shared promise disappears, a relationship is in deep trouble, no matter the solidity of its everyday grounding. Often, the breaking of a promise is the simple coming to understand that the horizon has already gone, that it disappeared a long time ago and must be regathered and re-established in each individual life. But in love, or out of it, one of the enduring triumphs of a long-term commitment is the way both partners become apprentices to the promise itself, realizing, like the other they are with, that it has its own life, its own difficult and surprising invitations, and its own constant beckoning to vulnerability, presence, and depth. Many times, the promise is never spoken out loud. It is implicit and walks with us as an invisible companion. At other times, at crucial thresholds, being able to say the promise out loud and be witnessed simply and courageously is all that is needed for our new life to begin again. Then we can walk away and let the promise do its own work without our will, our anxiety, or our over-elaborate plans to get in the way. End quote. And that's the, you can understand why I've apprenticed myself to the work of David White. And this really brings to mind a piece that I wrote on the eve of my marriage to Dimpna. This is the actual vow that I read. On vows. A vow is a pilgrimage. A vow is a pilgrimage. An often unrequited demand to not remain unchanged as we go from this place. An often unrequited demand to not remain unchanged as we go from this place. Asking of us when we stand here at the forking of the path, in the light of another, of a witness, and especially in the shadow of that best part of ourselves, the person we have not yet maybe even become. To give our word to go to another place, to weather those seasons, to live those days, and thus to choose willingly the way we will walk there, the places in between we will come to, what we will take with us, what we will collect by the way, and what we will have to leave behind us. And most of all, the manner of our grace when we discover we might never arrive. On vows, we make vows. We make a kind of promise that is not just to ourselves, but it's a kind of promise that we deliberately have our community and the world in some way, our sense of what we mean when we use words like God or the universe or fate or destiny. We are making that vow in that presence. And we often make these vows without understanding the implication of what we're saying, and we make them in a way that we hold promises. And what I've just been talking about is how our promises become too small for the journeys of our lives. And a pilgrimage, of course, is a way that you choose to follow, not necessarily with a destination. It's more the traveling of the way that you know will change you. And there's this beautiful saying in the Irish monastic tradition, to go to Rome, great the journey, little the gain. If you do not carry him with you, you will not find him there. And basically, it means if you do not carry the spirit of your intention with you, you will not find it along or at the end of the road. But we sometimes stand there in this poignant moment making a vow, and it's not that we're making it with the same intention that we hold a promise where we know ultimately, or we've reasoned now that sometimes these things need to be broken, but something needs to give in that journey if we are to hold our vows. And a vow is a pilgrimage, an often unrequited demand to not remain unchanged, to not remain unchanged as we go from this place, asking of us when we stand here at the forking of a path in the light of another, of a witness, and especially in the shadow of that best part of ourselves, the person we have not maybe even yet become. To give our word is this thing that makes promises hard to break. Our word is this outer commitment to the world that is a reflection of our own integrity and our own authenticity. To give our word to go to another place, to weather those seasons, to live those days, and thus to choose willingly the way we will walk there, the places in between we will come to, what we will take with us, what we will collect by the way, and what we will have to leave behind us. And these journeys, especially when we make a vow, we are creating a container with ourselves and somebody else. And we're trying to show up as that best version of ourselves or as a version of ourselves. And a vow is the kind of agreement, the kind of promise where we say, I don't know what I will encounter along the way, but I am choosing now to choose the struggle, choose the difficulty, choose the challenge, as long as there is a choosing that comes back the other way. To give our word to go to another place, to weather those seasons, to live those days, and thus to choose willingly the way we will walk there, the places in between we will come to, what we will take with us, what we will collect by the way, and what we will have to leave behind us. And most of all, the manner of our grace when we discover we might never arrive. On vows. That was a piece I wrote on the eve of my wedding to my lovely wife on March 2021. It's the attempt to keep true to that vow that has made it necessary for me to actually break other promises. Promises to myself, promises to loved ones, promises to identities that I held. And I've learned that there is, you know, we write to make our promises because they're made in the most beautiful place with the most beautiful intentions. But then we also write to break them. And then I sat with the question, well, what does that mean then? Why are we making promises in order to break them? And I realized that the mature game is to make agreements between ourselves and the people or the projects or the identities that we want to hold and let there be terms in those agreements. Terms both in the conditions under which they can survive and live and seasonalities that we allow for and allow to change and to change us as we follow that journey. And a big part of ending and letting go and letting cycles and seasons end involves this understanding of seasonality, of forgiveness, of reconciliation, of walking away, of redemption for ourselves, and of finally letting ourselves break promises and letting promises to us be broken, because that is the biggest part of healing. All of our deepest wounds come from the fact that there was some unspoken, indelible promise that we arrived expecting to be true in this world about mother, about father, about goodness, about justice, about law, about belonging, about safety. Many of them which life has broken many times along the way and our hearts with it. And even though sometimes, especially as children, we are actual victims of the circumstance that we find ourselves in, we cannot move forward in that victim place. And the way out of that is to begin to assume responsibility, not for what happened to us, but for realizing that we had to choose an allowing of that. Not because we weren't good enough as people, it's because we weren't ready. We weren't able to hold stronger boundaries for ourselves yet. And it's so important to realize how important breaking promises are. This covenant of self-permission that we operate under, where we decide for what we believe love looks like, sincerely, what we believe love looks like, we give ourselves permission to enter into new promises, to break agreements, to call people out on those agreements, to hold boundaries for ourselves, and to show the kind of leadership that we could find nowhere else in the world. Show that to ourselves. Now, I think I've got one more of these in me. I think I'm going to talk about possibility redemption next. But if you want to explore these ideas more deeply, and there is work that you feel you need to progress in your life around this, then at the very least, go sign up for my Substack. And I don't have another day job at the moment. This is my day job, trying to bring the medicine of understanding to people in ways that matter to me and ought to matter to all of us. So if you do sign up to that and you're in a financial position to do so, please look for the paid subscription of my Substack, because I can really do with all the support for this work and for myself. And secondly, I'm appealing to you to take some time out of your day and go to preferably the Apple Podcast platform and leave a review. Take a few minutes and leave a review and let the world know how this work connects with you and touches you and is helping you in your life, and because that way it can help other people. And finally, if you want to go deeper on a more personal level with this and you want to find out practices and approaches that you can implement and sustain, and how you can map a journey for yourself through the ending of cycles and into the new seasonality of your own life, go to my website, rockojarman.com or eyeswideopenlife.org. They both resolve to the same the same location. And it's pretty easy from there to see what I'm up to and what the other projects are, to catch previous episodes of the podcast, and also to book time with me. And if you're unsure, there's always the 30-minute free introduction session, wherein we can establish an open agreement and decide the terms of that. So I really hope that this episode has landed for you, and that this arc of episodes of ending cycles, of forgiveness, of reconciliation, of walking away, saying goodbye, letting go, and now this one of breaking promises and making agreements. I really hope this has added value for you, and I appreciate your energy and your time that you invest in listening to these and participating in your way. And until next time, take care.